Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Katie Hawkins, and I am the chair of the California Boating and Waterways Commission. I call to order this meeting on October 1st, 2024. The meeting is being held in Granzella Inn in Williams, California, as well as virtually on Zoom. As a reminder to everyone, this meeting is live webcast and can be viewed at www.cal-span-or.org. Excuse me. The archive videos will also be available at cal-span.org website. Before we get started with the reports of today on today's agenda, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Next, I'd like to ask the clerk to take the roll call for today's commission. Please note we do not have a quorum at this meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Madam Chair. At this point, I will be calling roll. Catherine Hawkins, Chair from Truckee, California.
Present.
Tom Pierre, Vice Chair from San Francisco, California. Absent. Jose Gonzalez, Commissioner, Sacramento, California.
Present.
Maggie Hallahan, Commissioner, San Francisco, California.
Present.
Thank you. There are three present. We do not have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So, Karina, will you read the statement regarding public comment on the agenda and non-agenda items via Zoom, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair Hawkins. I will provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. First, I will cover the in-person meeting protocol. In order to provide comments on agenda items in person, members of the public are requested to fill out the green public comment form. In order to provide comment on non-agenda items in person, members of the public are requested to fill out the blue public comment form. Both public comment forms are available at the sign-in table. All completed forms should be turned in to me, please. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments. Now I will cover the procedures on using Zoom. If you wish to make a verbal comment on one of the agenda items, or if you want to make a comment during the items not on the agenda comment period, you must use the Zoom webinar app or call in by phone. The commission will hear public comments from in-person attendees first, and then the public comment And then we will hear public comments from attendees on Zoom. If you are currently watching the webcast on calspan.org, but you want to make a public comment, please register for the Zoom webinar to receive your unique ID and password or a phone number if you wish to call. Information can be found on the notice, agenda, or dbwparks.ca.gov. To make public comments on agenda items, please virtually raise your hand at the beginning of the presentation to let us know you wish to speak. To do this, if you're using a computer or tablet, use the raise hand button in the Zoom webinar app, or if you're calling in by phone, dial *9 to raise your hand. If you are calling in by phone, dial *6 to unmute your device. When the public comment period starts, the order of commentators will be determined by the registration list and then who raises their hand first. I will call each commentator by name and then unmute your device. For members of the public that call in, you will be identified by the last three digits of your phone number. Please note, you will not appear by video when you make your comments. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text to the area code 805-801-3676 or email to it@agpvideo.com so an IT person can assist you. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Karina. At this time, I'd like to acknowledge our local dignitaries, and we have with us Sam Perkins, the district representative from Senator Dolly's office. Thanks, Sam. Thanks for joining us. Okay. Okay. And at this time, virtually, I'd like to acknowledge our Division of Boating and Waterways staff. We have Ramona Fernandez, Deputy Director of the Division of Boating and Waterways. We have Catherine Tobias, the Senior Legal Counsel from California State Parks. Virtually online, we have Liz McGurk, the Chief Deputy Director. We have Maribel Barajas, Deputy Director of Legislation from California State Parks. We also have Crystal Flores, Assistant Deputy Director of Administration for the California State Parks. Thanks for joining. Moving right along, I want to give time for my report and my fellow commissioners' activities since our last commission meeting. At this time, I'll wait till I give my report and just want to hand it over to the commissioners to let us know what they've been up to. Commissioner Hallahan.
Hello, thank you everyone for attending and having this opportunity. I like that we have this report at the beginning. It's a nice way. I'm a new commissioner, and it's a nice way for me to slowly move into the areas that I'd like to talk more about. But people have been coming to me as well, and harbor owners or small community harbors are having a hard time to raise the funds that things like BCDC are requiring them to make changes for higher water levels and changes. There are a lot of concerns about access for the community. It's hard for a profitable harbor to do that, but for community harbors or small community harbors, it's very difficult. So I'd like to speak about that more. And then also speaking a lot with Indigenous people, having access to the water. More access, easier access. So my report is on a looser level because I'm still getting used to how to work within the system. But overall, more access for youth and community and having answers to deal with our problems around rising sea waters.
Great, thank you. Next we'll Commissioner Gonzalez.
Thank you, Chair. For me, it's also relatively brief. No specific activities in between commission meetings per se, other than two quick things. One is, just like we had a site field visit today as well, I've noticed both, I think, a relatively common and I would say a fairly consistent note of the appreciation for the work that the division staff do. But I think also just the work of the division in terms of everything, but especially when it comes, for example, a lot of the different public funding support that goes to, I mean, we get to visit different parts of the state, but I think especially in rural areas, what I've noticed when I say in terms of common and fairly consistent, how much they really are destinations, not necessarily only for, you know, people might say, oh, why are we providing support to this relatively far, quote unquote, far out there location, but it's in service to the whole state. And so I think that's exciting in some ways to be able to hear how a lot of these areas are visited by people from throughout the whole state. And I just want to stress that because I think that can be, that's easy to forget. And then secondary, the appreciation for, especially hearing for all types of and levels of elected officials. We have everyone from county supervisors to city councils, to both state and federal representatives, like you name it, as well as the staff at all those areas that also put in the work. And so I just want to note that very openly because I think that in the absence of not knowing or presuming what is the work, and even for me, my kind of personal joy and commitment to being on the commission is that deep appreciation, what this work looks like in areas that a lot of times people may not expect. So that's all, Madam Chair.
Great, thank you. First, before I start, just want to give a lot of gratitude and appreciation to the folks in Colusa County. We had a tour this morning, specifically at the East Park Reservoir Boat Launch Facility, and we'll be able to talk about that project grant at our next meeting. But again, underscoring what Commissioner Gonzalez said, seeing the leadership at every level of government coming together to advance this initiative was really positive, and look forward to having a further discussion on that next month. So moving on, I was going to just note that between our last meeting and this meeting, there was some big wins in Southern California. From my standpoint, I would just appreciate a lot of gratitude and appreciation for California Natural Resources Agency, the Parks Department, Department of Defense, Navy, and members of Congress on San Onofre in renewing that lease for 25 years. That was a huge lift on everyone's part, but it really has an incredible impact to the community in Southern California. And folks that I work with, mainly surfers, it's an iconic surf spot. It's world renowned. So appreciate everyone's leadership on that huge lift, literally monumental. Also, just as a Californian, I was at Doheny State Park this last weekend for a music festival, and it was amazing to see that collaboration and bringing different people into California State Parks. And we talked about, you know, special permits here earlier, but it was just again just showcasing and highlighting, you know, our California's coast and our beautiful landscape. But that doesn't happen without a lot of cross jurisdiction collaboration between so many entities. So again, those were kind of the highlights down in Southern California. But for me, close to home in Donner Lake, I just want to acknowledge that you know, it was a busy boating season, and unfortunately we did have a fatality last week at Donner Lake. And that being just next to me where I live and, you know, raise my family, it again underscores the importance of the work that the division is doing on boater education and safety. Unfortunately, the folks in the canoe did not have life jackets. And again, we are going to talk about budget and resources, but again, investing in meeting people in the community where they're at with education and safety is the number one priority of our work here. So that's all I have at this time. And with that, I will hand it over to Ramona for the Deputy Director's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So waiting for PowerPoint. First of all, it is good to be here with all of you this afternoon and here in Colusa. And I do echo what you say about us in Commissioner Gonzalez on the, you know, us getting out in the community, specifically in these rural areas where we do, you know, you don't really see the impact of everything, as I think one of the Board of Supervisors mentioned about just the economy and, you know, the restaurants and everything that impacts, you know, visitors that come to this area. Okay. So next slide, please. So I wanted to update the commission. Since you all last met in May, we do have additional staff that joined our team. We have John Mathias, who actually was part of the tour and is here today, who joined the Grants and Loans Unit as an Associate Parks and Rec Specialist. And John will be a project manager on the boat launch facility grants. So he was here kind of learning with Joe Dukes on his role with the division. I also wanted to recognize Jesse Zamora, who will be managing the Marine Law Enforcement Training Program as the coordinator. Jesse started in July, and so we look forward to him joining the team. The law enforcement training will just start to is starting to get back on board for the 2025 season. Our registration will go out November 1 for all statewide first responders and law enforcement to begin their training during, you know, quote unquote, off time. And also Emily Wiley, who joined the Yacht and Ship Licensing and Enforcement Unit. So she will be out enforcing and auditing yacht brokers for California. Next slide, please. So I also wanted to brief the commission on our recreational boating safety grant, an update on that grant. So as you are all probably aware, we receive funding from the U.S. Coast Guard as a long-standing partnership to administer grants for recreational boating activities for the state of California. The RBS grant has been under a corrective action plan for several years now. So I'm really pleased to announce that from approximately 28 deficiencies that were identified in our program, we have two remaining, which require Code of Regulations, so Title 14 changes from our state regulations to align with federal law. We are already in the process of working those through the rulemaking process. So we anticipate those will be finalized, you know, in the next 12 months or so. And again, I couldn't, you know, this couldn't have been accomplished. There was a lot of hard work between the DBW staff and specifically two managers, which was Maria Perez Allen and Zach Mundy, who really dedicated a lot of time coordinating, working closely with, along with leaders in the team from DMV and other divisions who were really instrumental in getting a statute through timely, such as our LEDGE office. So in early September, we submitted what we call an appeal letter, which is part of the grant process to the U.S. Coast Guard to kind of recognize our efforts and to allow us the time to proceed through that rulemaking process. So mid-September, the U.S. Coast Guard approved us, California, now as being provisionally approved. So we now are in the quote-unquote good list for the U.S. Coast Guard with our grant. And as part of that process, there was an abeyance of funding that was kind of withheld. So we're now, you know, will be fully funded moving forward and on that grant. So, next slide. This next few slides will identify some of those statute cleanup and regulations that we did as a result of this audit. So the first one is the Harbors and Nav Code 651, which was updated to reflect the most updated terminology found in federal law that align with state law of the definition of personal watercrafts. The update to reflect personal watercraft means a vessel propelled by a water jet pump or other machinery as its primary source of motive power and designed to be operated by a person sitting, standing, or kneeling on the vessel rather than sitting or standing within the vessel's hull. So that was the updated language. Additionally, in 651, it was updated to reflect other terminology to match federal statute. Another update was on the Harbors and Navigation Code 655.7 and 658. Point 3, which reflects the updated most terminology on the type of personnel flotation device carriage to reflect federal 33 CFR law. So this brings the state statute in line with federal statute to ensure that California boaters are using the most approved U.S. Coast Guard PFDs or personal flotation devices. And 658.3, excuse me. Next slide, please. And we also had change in the vehicle code 9853 and 9873 updates, which was the reciprocity. So basically that's titling of vessels in California to reflect federal law. So this language brings the state in line with federal statute. And more specifically, it matches the reciprocity time frame from our law was 90 days to now 60 days as required by federal statute, which means a boater can be here on our waterways now 60 days. After the 60 days, they must register their boat as in California. And next slide, please. So our, as I mentioned, the last two items on the items that were identified on the U.S. Coast Guard was Title 14, which is our Code of Regulations. So we are in draft form, as I indicated, to update those corresponding California Code of Regulations with statute language updates. So I will continue to update the commission over these next 12 months on where we are in that process. And next slide, please. So just a few updates on our loans and grants unit. As you can see on the screen there, and several award updates. We talked about, I think, at the last, during our tour of the Waterways Connection funding. So on the screen identifies three projects that we have that met the criteria for that particular funding. Also, the on the screen identifies floating restrooms. So as I mentioned there on the tour, $10 million of one-time funding from the Waterways Connection was allocated to the Division of Boating Waterways for boat launch facility projects. Again, that meets that project objective by expanding access to water recreation in inland areas. As I mentioned, there's three to date that we've funded through this source. The grants and loans unit will be holding a separate application for the remaining funding that is available, which is approximately $7 million. And you will hear more about that opportunity at the November commission meeting. Again, on the screen, on the floating restrooms, this year we were able to award eight new floating restrooms by combining two federal Clean Vessel Act grants for one larger purchase. So the restrooms will be delivered to the locations on the slide. Let's see, the funding was through 22-23 funding, totaling $1.3 million. All right. And next slide, please. Also, I wanted to update you on our boating safety and enforcement grants, which are also part of the RBS Recreational Boating Safety Grant funds we received from the U.S. Coast Guard. This application process closed for fiscal year 24 on April 30. The division received 29 applications requesting $3.4 million, and we were able to award $1.3 million to 17 agencies. And our surrendered and abandoned vessel exchange grant program, historically known as the abandoned watercraft abatement and vessel turn-in program, the division received 29 applications requesting $4.9 million, and we were able to award $2.75, which is the allocation for that program, to 29 agencies. And next slide, please. No picture. So our aquatic invasive plant control program, I wanted to address the commission on some highlight efforts that the aquatic invasive team has made to maintain services in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. So as you recall, last fiscal year, we did reduce this program by $5.2 million. So the DBW has procured the following service level agreements. And next slide. Nope, forward one. Thank you. Yeah, I thought that transition left. Anyways, so current service-based agreements, as mentioned, we have $20 million, a contract $20 million is executed through June of 2025 with the Department of Water Resources. It is expected that another multi-year contract will follow that this current contract. $1 million contract through April 2025 with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and that also is expected for more funding to be available next fiscal year. $3 million with a federal grant with California Department of Fish and Wildlife Services through March of 2026. $10 million contract with a Pescadero Reclamation District through June of 2025. $395,000 grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service through September of 2028. And $224,000 donation agreement from the Delta Coves Maintenance Corporation through December of 2025. The Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program we've also entered into a contract to help perform these services with a contractor called Clean Lakes. The contractor will perform services for the division through current and future agreements. And the contractor will also perform services that the program has, kind of fill in that gap that the program can no longer support through our Harbors and Watercraft Evolving Fund. So this is, again, as you all were part of the engagement process, to where those that benefited from this program but were not paying into the fees. So huge kudos goes out to the Aquatic Invasive Species leadership for being proactive, getting out there, and getting the funding to continue with those services. And my last slide is just next division report will be November 7th, 2024 in Long Beach. And this will be in coordination with the annual Marine Recreation Association's annual conference. And that concludes my report, Madam Chair.
Great, thank you, Ramona. At this time, we'll hear public comment. Karina, do you have any comment cards at this time?
I do not have any comment cards, and there are no hands raised either.
Okay, do any of my fellow commissioners have any questions? Commissioner Gonzalez.
Question and a comment and thank you for the update and report. On the recreational boating safety grant update, can you remind me, so that whole process of getting even to where we are now, it's been a few years, right? So, guesstimate 3+ or
yes,
5?
Yes, so our last, it actually started in probably 2017, was the last state visit. Last year they did a follow-up visit with the state. So it was kind of a combination of new issues that were brought to our attention, and also just working through, working with the Department of Motor Vehicles on some of the ways that California issues their title and registration. So, you know, getting through and developing that working relationship with DMV really was key in getting the right leadership over there to understand, you know, the program side and the necessary changes that they needed to make on their side.
Thank you. And I ask that because even just in my comment now, which you're welcome to respond to as well, I was going to say just even my short time on the commission. Well, first, this is, to me, it's a big deal. And I presume, you know, for everyone involved, because just the work that it would take to bring this to go from however many, like you said, to two, huge. And I think that just follows through on a bunch of other things in your report. I mean, even for the Waterways Connections Initiative funding, I remember visiting all those three sites that now are going to have the funding for those improvements. And then also, you know, just when I even started, that was the conversation for aquatic invasive plant control, right? Like, why is the division doing all of this work, and where are the other beneficiaries? So everything you just named, those are all like new agreements, even within the past 2 years. So I mentioned that because, again, kudos. It's not just the division staff working within the division, but the coordination with both other state and federal agencies, let alone other partners. So I just wanted to really highlight that because it's very celebratory to me. Like I said, even just in my short time in the commission, acknowledging, of course, there's always going to be lots to do, but it's these moments of like getting to really see and hear,
right,
the outcomes of all those efforts.
Thank you, Commissioner Gonzalez. Yes, and again, it is also just within the, so within the department. I mean, again, you know, within the division, we had resources from outside the division that stepped up, and then being creative on how to figure out how to bring this money in, you know, because it sounds so simple that, you know, someone wants to give you $1 million in the state, and it's not just so easy that we can grab that check and start spending it. So it, you know, having those resources, our partnerships office was key in, you know, finding creative ways to enter into agreements so that we can then start the work and receive the money.
And thanks for the entire community that pulled this together. Invasive species is a huge, for decades, I have conversations with it. Voters are always working around it. When I was up the San Joaquin River this summer, some of the older captains were saying that around 2016-17, someone didn't pull the permit, who was the head of boating and waterways at the time. And there was so much invasive species that the commercial ships couldn't get to their ports. So I'm just wondering, was it basically this department saying why it's all this heavy lifting around invasive species, this department's group? So is there a point where it happened where the invasive species group is not, they're collecting the money directly, and our organization is stepping away from them with guidance? I mean, is invasive species, you know, the center that we went and saw outside of Stockton, are they collecting the money directly for the state and doing this work, or how are we helping? Are we helping with the vendor? What are we doing now?
So historically, so thank you, Commissioner Hallahan. So, a few things happened. So the invasives obviously grew. So at one point when this program was initially established, being part of the then Department of Boating and Waterways, we had very few invasive plants. And over the years, you know, as it grew, there was our program didn't grow with that. So there was legislative that put additional staff, so the resources weren't available for us. So legislation went through, and we did get a BCP through to increase our resources, but funding wasn't part of that. So still the responsibility lied on the funding, which was Harbors and Watercraft Evolving Fund, which is, as you know, registered, California registered boaters, and loans, our loan program. Are those primary source, and then of course the motor vehicle fuel account. So there isn't any other source other than the state funding that we have. And so through engagement with stakeholders and the commission over the last 18 months or so, I think it was, there was lots of discussion of how this program has grown, and really just wasn't boaters who are benefiting from this program, and it was, you know, the agricultural developers and others, but weren't paying into the fund. So what I kind of identified there was those now that have realized that, and so they are now, you know, it's not long term, but it is a start of discussions of, you know, that what we do does impact more than just recreational boaters in the Delta.
So are the funds going directly to that government organization of invasive species?
Yes.
Are they becoming their own?
Yes.
Are they spinning off, becoming their own department, sort of?
No. So those funds that I mentioned do come directly to the program.
Through our organization?
Yes.
So we're still sheltering them and guiding?
Well, we're doing the work, yes, and we're guiding, yes.
The vehicle, the funds that come from the federal government for the gas rebate, the fuel rebate that you just mentioned, you said from the motor vehicle fuel
general fund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's mostly coming from federal taxes through the DMV over to the commission.
That comes to state general fund. It's state.
It's state.
Yeah.
And that's in alignment with percentage-wise of what boats are using for fuel?
That's in alignment with what's in statute, yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you. I, again, just echoing the comments, you know, seeing some of the subcommittee work and the implementation that happened and seeing that over the last 2 years is a joy. When we were, you know, focused on identifying other funding opportunities, and the staff and the division have done that, and it's really nice to be on this side of it and have been part of that ideation almost 3 years ago, which was very cool. So, and also just want to celebrate the successes of new staff members and, you know, finding those, you know, what sounds like small wins for the division are actually pretty monumental. Again, using that word as far as the deficiencies, bravo, and getting up to that. And then also, we were able to see firsthand at our last commission meeting the partnership that's happening with the aquatic invasive species and the partnership, again, throughout all the local communities, cross jurisdiction, state, federal, and at the local level, counties. And so it's, you know, I feel like, and this will kind of segue into our next discussion or agenda item, but just maximizing our budget, and when we do have the money, that we're putting the money into communities, such as with the Water Connection initiative. We saw that, again, all throughout the state. And so, again, when we do have these resources, they are being used and implemented where they are needed. So just a lot of, like, you know, positives. So thank you, Ramona, and to the entire staff, okay? With that, let's move on to the next agenda item. And I'd like to invite up Crystal Flores to talk about the 2024-25 enacted budget. Crystal?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm going to share my screen with you all. Just give me one moment. Okay, can you see my screen? I'm assuming yes, and you can hear me?
Yeah, we can see your screen, Crystal.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Yeah, thank you so much. again, I'm Crystal Flores. I'm the Assistant Admin Deputy. I'll be doing an overview of the 24-25 enacted budget. All right, so this is a high-level view of the overall funding. It's consistent with the prior year, with some minor adjustments for employee compensation and other employee benefits. We have $31.5 million for state operations and just around $30 million for local assistance. The Budget Act for 24-25 promotes government efficiencies through some budgetary reductions. the Budget Act solves a $46.8 billion deficit through a mix of solutions, including Control Section 4.12. This is a vacant position sweep. The 24-25 budget assumes a permanent reduction of $1.5 billion, which estimates $762.5 million from the general fund by eliminating funding for vacant positions starting in the current year. And then we have Control Section 4.05 is an ongoing reduction to operations to address the projected general fund deficit. Nearly all departments are facing an up to 7.95% reduction in state operations. The department is still working through these sections, so there's no update yet on what funds will be impacted. The floating restrooms. The division received a $300,000 increase in the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund to continue construction and delivering ADA compliant floating restrooms. This funding will be used to meet the required state match to leverage federal funding from the Clean Vessel Act Inland Grant. Here we have a chart that represents all fund expenditures under the division. State operations stays fairly consistent, and usually local assistance does the same. But as you can see in 22-23, there was a public beach restoration fund one-time increase for beach erosion control projects. That's why you see the spike in that year. The dollars in 22-23 are actuals. The 23-24 and 24-25 dollars are estimates. Next up, this slide shows local assistance by appropriation for the last 3 years. This gives a better picture of the spike I just noted on the last slide. That's the $15.2 million dollar amount you see in 2022. In the pink section, you can see our 22-23 fiscal stability BCP in effect, where you see the removal of annual baseline funding for the Boach Launch Facility grants. So it goes from 19.5 to 13 in 23 and 24. This slide here, you can see the 3 years of revenue for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. Please note that the low years and high years are due to vessel registration being paid biannually. Those dollars are in the pink. Amounts in the yellow are from the motor vehicle fuel account transfer, and the amounts in green are from interest income from investments and return and investments on return on principal. So this just gives a picture of the up and down impact. So this slide shows or illustrates the total expenditures and compares that to the revenues of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. This picture tracks to the galley. So this is where you can kind of see this same thing, actual expenditures in 22-23 and actual revenue in 22-23. And then 23, 24, and 24, 25 are projections. Okay, and then this slide better shows how significant the general fund transfers have been for the fund. Those dollars are noted in the green. And I should note that this is the final year for general fund transfers. Expenditures include transfers out, and revenues also include transfers in. The divisions implemented expenditure reductions for the last several years, which helps the fiscal outlook of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. But because of the biennial nature of the revenues, it makes it difficult to have year-to-year stability. So that is my high-level overview. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Crystal. At this time, Karina, do we have any public comment?
Madam Chair, yes, we do. Mark Smith will be our first one. As a reminder, if you're calling by phone, dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute your device. Mark Smith, go ahead. You are free to speak.
Mark, are you with us?
Mark Smith, are you with us? Okay, Mark, we're going to come back to you. The next one we'll go to would be Mr. Jerry Desmond. Jerry, go ahead and unmute. You're free to speak.
Hi, thank you. This is Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California. And as the commission considers the fiscal reports that we just saw on the PowerPoint slides, we would like to point out and emphasize, I know a number of the commissioners and Director Ramona Fernandez are aware that there was a stakeholder process that was engaged by the dedicated efforts of the division and the and different commissioners that looked at the structural deficit of the Harbors of Watercraft Revolving Fund and identified and prioritized a number of actions that could be taken to address that deficit. And I think our community, Recreational Boaters of California, and I think shared by a number of other stakeholder boating industry groups who have engaged in that process, continue to stress the importance of the division and this commission, ideally, identifying and looking at those recommendations and seeing if any of them can be accomplished in order to provide a reasonable approach to funding going forward. In the short term, we do acknowledge that action has been taken to have beach erosion control considered in a different forum and by different funding streams, ideally than the boating population and the gas tax dollars and the registration fees we pay. But we think there's a lot more that could be done, and we encourage that to occur sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Desmond. Mr. Smith, are you available to speak?
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Sorry, had to log in from my phone. Mark Smith on behalf of the National Marine Manufacturers Association, the Coastal Conservation Association of California, a number of other recreational angling and boating interests. Jerry kind of stole all my thunder. So Jerry, thank you for stepping in when I was unable to speak. And I think we just want to identify with the comments he made and encourage you to keep in mind that there was a stakeholder process. Many solutions to the systemic structural budget deficit were put on the table. We are going to have to revisit that. The presentation made that painfully clear. Would ask you and remind you to please engage us as stakeholders earlier rather than later in the process. The last couple times the governor has put forward proposals to solve the problem, we've been given those proposals with less than 3 weeks to have a discussion in the legislature and present options to the legislature and the governor for solutions. I don't believe that that's the appropriate way to handle this. We should all collectively work together over an extended period of time, and we look forward to doing that. Thank you.
One moment. Okay. Is that all the public comments that we have at this time, Karina?
Yes, Madam Chair, that concludes public comment.
Excellent. And then I'll hand it over to my fellow commissioners. Yep.
I would like to say thank you to Jerry Desmond and Mark Smith for coming on and taking the time. Did I hear you correctly and say that you that the community of boaters put together a recommendation at the beginning of the year and sent it to the commissioners and to the director?
Jerry, you want to tackle that one?
It's actually Commissioner, even prior to that, it was a couple of years ago that your commission, your predecessors, thankfully and with dedication, undertook a stakeholder process on different subjects regarding the structural deficit that resulted in the presentation by commissioners on their subcommittees, a presentation to this full commission and delivery to the State Parks Department, a number of reports and recommendations. And so they've been on the record for a couple of years already. But as stakeholders, Mark's groups, mine and others, Bo Biller representing a number as well, together came to a consensus of different solutions that we encouraged in the process. And we have several letters that we could forward to you in that regard. But again, a couple of years ago.
Do you feel that it's good to bring them back up and review and see what actions were taken and what low-hanging fruit might be still on those trees so we could see if we
Certainly.
could implement them? So I'd like to revisit that. Seems like a lot of people put a lot of hard work into it, and it'd be nice to take a time check on it and see if there's other possibilities there.
So is that, are you going to lead that effort then?
I am. My email, it will be on here. And yes, I would really like to review it. If anyone has it and can send it to me, it'd be great.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. Commissioner Gonzalez, nothing at this time. Okay. Well, again, I'm really looking forward. I think the commission is looking forward to be in front of the community next month for our meeting and to be with everyone. And so those opportunities for public engagement and collaboration on how we move forward, especially in this next budget cycle that we're going to be in. It is just to stress the importance of partnership, collaboration at every level, which we are seeing, and those are things that we should be celebrating and, again, working together towards future goals. So appreciate the conversation, and we'll just look forward to seeing everyone next month. Okay. With that, I would like to hand it over for agenda item number 8, Maribel, to give us the legislative report.
Can everybody see me and hear me okay?
We can, yes.
Okay, perfect. I was like, was that, yeah. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Maribel Barajas, Deputy Director of Legislative Affairs for the Department. This report provides a summary on the status of legislation affecting the Division of Boating and Waterways. Information contained in this report is as accurate as September 13, 2024. SB 156, this bill updates multiple sections of the Harbors and Navigation Code to conform with federal law. This bill was signed by the governor on July 2nd, 2024. SB 1066 related to marine flares. This bill would enact the Marine Flare Producer Responsibility Act of 2024 to establish an extended producer responsibility program for marine flares with oversight by the Department of Toxic Substances Controlled and specified. This bill was vetoed by the governor. That completes the legislative report, and happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Maribel. At this time, do we have any public comment?
Yes, Madam Chair, we do.
Excellent.
Mark Smith, you are free to speak. Please unmute yourself.
Thank you. Can you hear me again?
Yes, we can.
Great. Mark Smith, again, on behalf of the National Marine Manufacturers Association and a variety of other stakeholders, I wanted to draw the commission's attention to a new piece of legislation that is actually currently being discussed today in the California legislature. It's AB X29. This is the special session on the governor's gasoline proposals. This bill in particular deals with accelerating a study to increase the amount and availability of ethanol-based fuels in California. You are all probably aware that ethanol fuels and marine vessel engines do not mix. As a matter of fact, they can be disruptive and completely damaging to marine vessel engines. A coalition of stakeholders has written a letter of concern, not an actual position on the measure, but a letter of concern that increasing the availability and access to ethanol fuels in California without appropriate consumer notifications and awareness could result in boaters accidentally, a proliferation of accidentally introducing ethanol-based fuels into our engines. Again, want to say that this bill has not passed, but it is part of the special session deliberations that are taking place now. And it does have a risk to the boating community, and we would like to keep an eye on it and make you aware of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that update. And we look forward to seeing how this progresses through the legislators and getting an update from Maribel and team. Okay. All right. Is there any other public comment?
Madam Chair, we have one more. Mr. Jerry Desmond, you are free to speak, please.
Hi, Jerry Desmond, again with Recreational Boaters of California, and reiterating the comments that Mark mentioned with the concerns with E15 and ethanol and boat engines. And our experience has been that there is ample risk to the boating community that is well documented over several years, that we need to ensure that the marine vessels and marine engines continue to have a sustainable, you know, ethanol-free source of fuel that will not damage the engines and the over 600,000 recreational boaters are there. So we appreciate the attention to the issue as we try to highlight our concerns in the forum that's taking place now. Thank you.
Might I make one more comment? The National Marine Manufacturers Association has done a study on sustainable fuels and the ability to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the boating sector in general. We have made some presentations on this topic to I think we've discussed this with the commission in the past. I know we've certainly presented this at the MRA conference, which happens at the end of the year, actually coming up here in November. But we would welcome the opportunity to give a more thorough presentation to the commission if you felt it was appropriate. It's not enough just to move to ethanol-based fuels. We also need to increase the opportunity for boaters to access sustainable fuels. We need to do our part to drive down greenhouse gases, and we need to make these alternative solutions available to boaters. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. Is there any other public comments at this time?
No, Madam Chair, that concludes the public comment for the legislative report.
Okay, excellent, great. I will hand it over to my fellow commissioners. Maggie.
I would like to ask a question to our two gentlemen making comments, Mark and Jerry. So as a boater, there's less and less places to fuel, and I've noticed especially smaller sailboats just going to regular gas stations and filling up 5-gallon jugs and going back to their boat, even though they're not supposed to do that, I think. So what is your understanding right now on all the marine fuel stations? Are they using a very specific, we're not talking diesel, just gas. Are they getting filled up by a very specific system in California of a specific gas for the marine vessels?
Maybe I'll try to take a run at that. Jerry may have some familiarity with this too. I mean, most of these most of these fuel stations located in marinas or along our rivers and lakes where they are accessible just use regular fuel, right? So they're receiving that fuel through shipments just like a gas station would receive that fuel. I'm not familiar with the schedule and the frequency of delivery. I do agree with you that sometimes it is hard to access fuel, and I've seen plenty of boaters go fill up their fuel tanks, their 5-gallon drums and containers, and bring them down to their boats. I know in some places, like where I keep my boat, that's prohibited. I know in other places it's probably not. I don't know if that appropriately addresses your question, Commissioner, but fuel access is an issue, and getting access to sustainable fuels is an even greater issue. These fuels are available in the marketplace. They're just generally not available on the scale, the commercial scale that we would need to successfully introduce them into the boating community.
But right now under regulations, do you know if in California, when I see fuel stations getting filled, are they getting filled with the exact same fuel that's at the Shell around the corner when they go down to the marine fuel station?
That is my understanding. Jerry, if you have information to the contrary, I'll step aside, let you talk.
Well, I'm just going to share that some of the newer gases fouls really quickly, and a lot of boats, because it's harder and harder to get to fuel up somewhere, they're filling up their tanks, but it goes bad with the newer fuels. So it's 6 months or 9 months, I've heard of people with new boats having to, because the gas went bad, that they damaged their engines. So I'm hearing that from mechanics, and I'm sure that could be, you know, established as really a problem, and that a lot of people are talking about it.
I assume that there's no further public comment on this?
No, Madam Chair, okay. There's no more comment.
Great. Thanks, Karina. Okay. Well, at this time, we'll move on to agenda item 9, which is the public comments that are not, which are not on the agenda. At this time, we will hear public comments that are not on the agenda. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comments. Are there any blue comment cards or any raised hands on Zoom?
Madam Chair, there are no blue comment
cards. Okay. All right, then I will formally ask that we close public comment. Okay, great. And that sets us up for a 15-minute break. We will come back at 2:15. And have program updates from staff. Okay. All right, we are back. I wanna formally welcome everyone back, and we are now going to go to agenda item 10, which are the program updates. And I would like to invite department staff, Vivian. Please join us to discuss the Boating Clean and Green program.
Thank you so much. Let me just make sure. Hold on, please, for a sec. Okay, perfect. Good afternoon, Madam Chair Hawkins, Commissioners, Chief Deputy Director McGurk, Deputy Director Fernandez, Legal Counsel Tobias, and everyone in attendance. My name is Vivian Matuk. I'm the Environmental Boating Program Manager for both California State Parks and the California Coastal Commission. I manage our California Boating Clean and Green Program, which is a statewide boater education and technical assistance program that is implemented by both agencies. I'm going to be presenting updates on the 2023 year, and I'm the only staff person working in this program. The program is mainly funded through the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. The annual budget is around $351,000. The Coastal Commission contributes on an annual basis with around $35,000. And my program serves approximately 10,000 boaters and water enthusiasts on an annual basis. The main program components include education and outreach, research, technical assistance, and education and outreach, and also networking. In terms of education and outreach, in 2023, we continue with our Dock Walker program. Dock Walkers are partners trained by our program and our program partners, mainly in Southern California. We work with the Bay Foundation, which is also one of our Clean Vessel Act outreach grantees. These partner dock walkers or environmental educators come from different backgrounds, including boaters, marina, yacht club operators, public agencies, conservation corps, boaters, water enthusiasts who attend one of our trainings that we offer throughout the state. Last year, we conducted 14 virtual and 3 in-person dock walker trainings, working with 176 partner dock walkers. During the training, we talk about the importance of boating in California, potential sources of boat pollution, best management practices. These environmental educators can help us to share with boaters, as well as some education and outreach strategies to conduct the face-to-face education. Once these environmental educators are trained, then they go out and meet boaters wherever they are, not necessarily at marinas, but as you can see some of these pictures, at boating events, boat launch ramps, marine supply stores, among others. Talk to them about clean boating practices, distribute our main outreach tool, which is the California Boater Kit that you can see in your slide right now, which is a comprehensive packet of clean and safe boating information that has been developed based on research and input provided by our technical advisory group comprised of members with the marina industry and boating associations. In other words, the experts, and I'm excited to report to all of you that California was the first state in the nation to create this concept that now several of the states have copy, and that's part of, we're excited to always be in the front of environmental education. Last year, we were able to produce and distributed 7,500 boater kits. And also since the year 2000, we have been able to develop and distribute 120,000 boater kits. For every boater kit that we distribute, our environmental educators or partner dock walkers are required to collect a questionnaire that helps us to better orient our education and outreach effort. Again, part of the research we're constantly doing. This boater kit contains, as you see in the slide, three pollution prevention tools, including the oil absorbent pillow, the oil absorbent sheet, and also a fuel bib. Our partner dock walkers learn to share with the boaters how to use them, how to properly dispose of them at the local level. In addition, we have several education and outreach publications that are extremely important to support clean boating practices across the state, including our bilingual boaters guide to keep pollutants out of the water with very specific best management practices related to potential sources of boat pollution, and also important phone numbers for boaters to have handy, including how to properly report oil, fuel, sewage spills, entangled animals, among others. This map shows where boaters live who have learned about clean boating from not only partner dock walkers, but also staff in 2023. This is information that we are able to gather and map as part of the research that we're doing through our boater kit questionnaire. And as you can see, it's a very geographically diverse map. Now let's hear from one of our partner dock walkers about the program.
Hello, my name is Doug, and I'm a volunteer dock walker. I sail a keel boat in the San Francisco Bay and the Sacramento Delta. One of the benefits of being a dock walker is speaking with other boaters about how to keep our waters clean. The boaters I've spoken to have enthusiastically supported and pledged to use pump-out stations, drop their used oil off at appropriate sites, and to be careful when refueling their vessels. So let's keep it clean and green. Thanks for listening.
Another component of the program is our participation at different boat shows and boating events, as you will see also later on from my colleague Melissa Miranda, the manager for the Public Education and Boating Safety Unit. Last year, we participated in three boat shows. These give us a perfect opportunity to have a face-to-face communication with boaters, share with them information. And in these boat shows, we were able to reach out to over 300 boaters. We also provide clean boating presentations. Last year, we conducted six of those and over 270 participants. In order to diversify our multifaceted outreach approach, we started back in April 2022 with our podcast called The Dock Side. We are working with our colleagues with the Boating Safety and Education Unit. And the goal of this podcast is to bring very important topics for boaters, water enthusiasts, among others. I hope all of you, including you, commissioners, have listened to our podcast. You can see all these platforms where you have the opportunity to listen to that, especially driving back home this afternoon. We have created over 26 episodes to date, and the topics involve from plastic and marine debris, sewage management, wells, We highlight important women sailors not only at a worldwide level, but also here, of course, in the United States, such as Captain Mary Rogers, a leader in women sailing and the Black community. Actually, she was one of the first women commodore in a yacht club in the entire nation. As you know, one of the core values of our agency is cultural diversity and accessibility. We heard a little bit about this at the beginning of our commission meeting. Thus, we are committed to making boating accessible and inclusive for all Californians. These are some of the resources that we have in different languages, not only including our social media posts, a Facebook Live that I'll be showing in a few minutes. We also have our mass email campaign, the fact that we go to boat shows and boating events. And as you can tell by my accent, I can properly speak, for example, Spanish. We also have a website that is easy to navigate and access to over 131 languages, and also some of the publications that I show you in the past, like the binder card, our boater questionnaire and fishing line recycling program information. Last year, we continued with our six-week summer campaign from July to September, where in order to engage more with younger generations of boaters, we are posting one clean boating question every week for a total of 6 weeks with a chance to receive one of our California boater kits. These are some examples of some of the questions that our boaters are engaged to take and participate in. And we're excited to report that last year was a fantastic year. Our goal was to reach 6,000 quiz completions. And as you can tell, I'm amazed because filling out quizzes is not that fun. But people were into this opportunity, and we had a 125% increase from 2022. We also, I mentioned to you, we have a great social media presence, bilingual also. These are an example of one of the most engaged posts that we have last year about oil sewage spill, among others. Another component of our program is technical assistance, and we work with a variety of state, federal, and local agencies. Last year, we launched a version 2 of our boating facilities, a spill response communication workshops in partnership with the Office of Spill Prevention and Response, where we're trying to provide resources to boating facility operators, not only when there's a spill inside their facility, but also outside of their facility. We had two hybrid of these workshops, and we were able to work with 100 participants. Another of our program components is the California Fishing Line Recycling Program. We try to work all over the state. During the reporting period, we have a total of 373 fishing line recycling stations. Through this program, we have been able to over 3,274 pounds of fishing line. When we collect that line is sent to a center that is recycled into fishing spools, fishing boxes, among others. If we stretch that line, it will stretch from San Francisco to Bahia Negra, Paraguay. Another effort that we had last year was in partnership with the California Product Stewardship Council, the Port of L.A., Alameda Marine, and East and West Contra Costa, where we offer expired marine flare collection events. A total of 5,542 flares were collected during these events, and we will have more in October and November this year. Finally, the boating community showed again their commitment to keep our waterways clean when last year we conducted the 39th annual Costa Cleanup Day. During last year, we were able to work with 41 boating facilities and boating groups who brought almost 1,800 volunteers, 203 vessels on the water. And this amazing collaboration and participation of our water enthusiasts and boaters help us to remove almost 18,000 pounds of trash and recyclables. And I want to show you a little bit of the bilingual effort that we're doing just to be inclusive in our efforts.
Aunque se llame el Día de la Limpieza de la Costa de California, porque así fue originalmente donde se inició, ocurre en todo el estado, desde el norte hasta San Diego, desde nuestra costa a todos los territorios adentro de nuestro estado tan hermoso. Queremos que todos participen.
In terms of our statewide numbers, and remember this is 2023, we had 45,000, almost 46,000 volunteers who removed in 3 hours 188 tons of trash and recyclables. Finally, I also work with the Clean Vessel Act team with our division. I work with Karen Deal and also Debbie Holmes and Ethan Threatner managing our CVA education and outreach grantees. Commissioners, this concludes my presentation.
Excellent. Thank you, Vivian. At this time, I wanted to see if we have any public comment.
Madam Chair, we have no public comment.
Okay, great. Fellow commissioners, is there any comments or questions for Vivian? Commissioner Gonzalez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another question and comment. And I think part of the question you already, I heard you answer it, I think, as I was formulating in my head, which is around how is California a national leader when it comes to some of this work? Could you just restate that again or like give more additional examples and how a lot of the work that you're doing around this, either other states are adopting, you know, you're getting inquiries or you're getting to see the effect of what you're working on in other areas?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner. I'm excited to brag about that. So first of all, the California Voter Kit, so we were the first state in the nation that developed that concept based on our research. And a lot of the states are like, oh, that's fantastic. Great way to really conduct face-to-face education, which brings me to the following concept, which is the Dog Walker program. Dog Walker is a unique program where we empower the members of our community to be our voices out there to help us to support clean voting practices across the state. And we have worked with all the Western states, Washington and Oregon. They're implementing our program, and we have been getting requests from Florida and Texas, which are, as we all know, one of the top five voting states in the nation. In addition to that, as part of the work that we do with colleagues within the division, we created the first in the nation, which is a national award app that is called the Pump Out Nav app, that became from being only in California to being a national app. So we're working right now with all the Western states, Texas and Vermont and other states, and even British Columbia to be part of this effort. Also, our multifaceted outreach approach has been mimic. I hate to say copy because copy has this negative connotation. So we always like to provide technical assistance to other states in terms of the videos, the podcast, the Facebook lives, and try to diversify in addition to the marine flare collection events that we're moving forward thanks to the research that we have conducted throughout these years.
Thank you so much. And then my comment, which of course you're welcome to respond to it as well. I know in your presentation you included some of the social media posts, and I think for me it's an appreciation, especially on Instagram. I do keep track of those and appreciate the mix both of educational, humorous, or even when they're humorous, they have an educational component. And so just, again, even in my short time in my commission, noticing the increase in the variety, I think, and having fun, if I can put it that way, with a lot of the social media posts that I'd like to think they're engaging in different ways. So whether it's Twiggy the squirrel reminding me to wear my life jacket, or even myself that I was excited about wear your life jacket to work week, but down to all of the information that, as you're mentioning. So I think those are all, it's a really good mix of both informative and kind of joyful content. So thank you.
No, thank you. And I just want to mention it's a great team effort, more on the environmental side, but you will hear next from my colleague, Melissa Miranda, who has a fantastic team. And we try to work to that together on, you know, different inclusive resources. So thank you for your attention.
Excellent. I'm still out for more comments from the commission. Yeah.
Hello. I've been wanting to meet you in person. I know it will happen someday. I've been following you for a while, even before I was a commissioner, and the work you're doing, fantastic, and you're full of so much joy about it. the youth really bring that forward when they get to learn these things. So thank you for keeping the youth involved and educated. I know you work closely with Melissa and all the other work. Just candidly, if you, you know, were Queen for a day and you could put anything on the voting card, what would you put in there that is something that you'd like everyone to know that you seem to re-educate people with that maybe just if they got a voting card, they would already have to know it? I'm not knowing if this can be, but it just seems like the voting card could have more questions along the work you're sharing over and over.
Yeah, we, Melissa will be able to address better the program because she's the manager of many programs, including that one. I can just say that I know we have to follow certain protocols for people to get the card. I personally, if I had the opportunity to be a queen, as you were saying, I will add more environmental information, but you know, there's a legal requirement that we need to fulfill for people to get the card, the courses that are approved, et cetera. So it's kind of a little bit out of our hands. Melissa knows that we have been trying to work for a long time to push more for that environmental approach. And I think one day we'll be getting more of that information there, but yeah, we're heading that direction.
I just noticed, I reviewed the whole voting card, and we teach Sea Scouts all the time, and we teach them a lot more environmental pieces that isn't in the voting card. And it seems like you're having to say the same thing over and over and teaching it. So is there anything specific, like an area that people don't know about that you feel that you share a lot to people in California?
Yeah, mainly would be based on our research, and the questions that we ask are basically the reporting about petroleum products, including fuel, oil, and even sewage. People a lot don't know the protocol, or people get a scare and think like, oh my gosh, why am I going just to auto report myself, right? But we have to teach them there are different important points of why federal and state agencies want you to report those spills. And sometimes it's because you're near a sensitive site that needs to be protected, but they don't penalize you every time. It's just on a case-by-case basis. So that kind of information is important. Also, some of the clean boating practices that we easily teach, which are how to prevent bilge discharges. For example, the cheapest way is the oil absorbents, easy to find, you know, cheap, that kind of things, in addition to where the pollution prevention services are in California. We have a fantastic network of oil recycling centers across the state, over 3,000. We have a fantastic network of pump outs and dump stations thanks to the CVA program. We have bilge pump outs. So kind of that connection.
If someone is in a marina without a bilge pump out, what do you tell them to do? Let's say I had someone waked them and all this ocean water went in to their boat, and that he felt that there was now water he had to deal with, and he couldn't turn his bilge pump on because he thought it was too dirty to turn into the lake, but there was no place for him to do it. So he had to go buy 5-gallon containers to suck it out. And then, yeah. So what do you suggest? What do you, because we just in this state do not, like most harbor masters always say, where are the bilge pump systems?
Yeah, so California has only 13 bilge pump outs because, as you know, you and I know, Commissioner Hallahan, recreational boaters don't use and abuse their engine like a commercial fishing fleet, for example. So the 13 bilge pump outs are found exactly where the commercial fishing fleets are found across the entire coast, right? In that case, we try to tell boaters, let's go on the preventive side. It's super easy that you always keep your bilge clean and dry and always carry, regardless of how good you are keeping your engine well-tuned and operating at peak efficiency, is to have an oil absorbent there, because that will prevent any potential accident. And accidents happen all the time, right? You just cited a perfect example. So having an absorbent is the perfect opportunity. And then teaching the boater, hey, remember in California, saturated absorbents are presumed to be hazardous waste for obvious reasons. Be careful where you properly and how you properly dispose of that. So there's a full cycle that we need to close. Preventive, action, and closing the loop in terms of the environmental impact you may generate, even with your waste.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the work you do.
Oh, my pleasure. And thank you for your comments.
Well, Vivian, I think we're all a fan of the program, so thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. You're a mighty team, but again, collaborating with your partners. And I will say, I did listen to Dockside and the three-part series with American Whitewater. You're speaking to my heart, so thank you. I don't know if that was a chair shout-out to me, but thank you for that. But also just meeting people where they're at, whether it's on their devices, through social media, through education, paid advertising, or the volunteer docs, you know, Doc Walkers. What an incredible program, and I'm thrilled to hear more as we go along. So thank you for your work, okay?
Thank you, and if you ever had any topic that you would like us to include in our podcast, please let us know. Thank you.
I knew I was signing myself up for something, yes. Yes, of course. thank you, Vivian. Okay, at this time, we'll turn it over to your colleague, Melissa Miranda, and we'll talk about safe boating education and outreach.
Oh, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Melissa Miranda, and I'm the manager over the Boating Education and Outreach Unit on the safety side. And today I'll be giving you a brief overview of the work that we do to help educate California boaters. So here's just a little brief overview of the agenda I'm going to cover today. I'm going to dive into the California Boater Card Program a little bit deeper. We're going to go over the boating safety courses that we offer, youth education, outreach, and life jacket programs. So before we get started, though, I want to introduce to you my amazing team that helps make all of this magic happen. So starting with Evan, he is one of our California Boater Card analysts, and he's been with the program since the inception of the actual program started. He will be here for questions if you have any at the end of my presentation. Next, we have Dan, who is amazing at daily customer contact. He fulfills all of our publication requests received. He manages our DBW home study course, which I'll talk to you a little bit about. And he also assists with the California Boater Card Program. Next, we have Alexa, our newest team member. We are super excited to have her on our team. She just joined us last month, and she's just really jumped right in feet first. She's already implemented some programmatic changes that have really optimized how our program is run, and she's doing fantastic. She's our other California Boater Card analyst, and we're just really, really excited to have her. And last but not least, we have Sarah, who is our Boating Education Outreach Coordinator, and so she does everything in between. She's the face of many of the videos that were mentioned by Commissioner Gonzalez, and I hope you guys have been following along on our social. She's been having a lot of fun creating original content to increase engagement, and I'll share one example of the fun videos that she's created a little later in the presentation. But she helps with our K-12 education program, life jackets, and all the things in between. Okay, so let's get started with the California Boater Card Program. Just a little background, this is our mandatory boater education program, and the card shows that the cardholder has successfully passed the safe boating course, and it's a $10 lifetime card, doesn't need to be renewed. That card can be purchased on our website, which I'll show you in a little bit. So the $10 is the only required fee for the program. And to date, we have issued over 285,000 cards. This year, we're at 60 years and younger. It's being phased in by age. So this year, 60 years and younger is required to carry the card if they're operating a motorized vessel on California waterways. So here's a timeline of significant dates for this program. This law was signed, the bill was signed into law in 2014. By Governor Brown, and it prohibits the operation of motorized vessels on California waterways without a California boater card. We began issuing cards in 2018, and then here we are in 2024, which, like I mentioned on my last slide, 60 years and younger is required to carry the card. Next year, we'll be at full implementation. I can't believe we've already arrived here. It's been a long haul, but here we are. So next year, all boaters, regardless of age, are required to carry the California voter card if operating a motorized vessel. So this bar graph shows voter cards issued since we began issuing cards in 2018. You'll notice a large jump in 2020. We all know what happened in 2020, so that number is a bit of an anomaly. And then you'll see the numbers going up. We anticipate those numbers increasing even more over the next year. But we're at just about 70,000 cards issued this year, which is an incredible goal for my very small but mighty team. And it's a 32% increase over the last reporting period. That's just huge numbers here. So here you see, this is a screenshot of our homepage of our California voter card website. And here is where our voters can find everything they need to know about the program. You'll see the four most commonly clicked areas on for the website. Obviously, they can apply here. We have a list of all of our courses. Our FAQs are very helpful, and we will answer most of voters' frequently asked questions. And we have some tutorials on how to apply. The application site we have is an internal database that helps keep voters' personal information on file, and we use it to help track voter trends. For advertising for this program, we use Google search advertising to boost our awareness of the program. We pay to have our ads at the top of Google search results. So when people search for specific words or phrases related to the California Voter Card program, we are at the top of the list for them. So this gives us the greatest return on our investment on the advertising side for this program. So DBW provides our own free basic voting safety course. It meets the educational requirements for the California Voter Card Program. We've had this course or an iteration of it for many years, even predating the California Voter Card Program. But it's an introductory voting safety course. And as of now, we will be going through a new approval process. Approvals are good through our overarching NASVA organization, the National Association of State Voting Law Administrators. They approve courses at the national level, and then we approve on the state level. And so we'll be going back out for an approval. They give 3-year approvals at a time. At this time, we're moving away from distributing the hard copies of this book as a more economical and environmentally friendly way to offer this course. And it's available as an ebook option on our website. It's very searchable. It's we find it to be very user friendly. And then instructions on how to order the answer sheets can also be found on the website. So voters can view the course online and then request the answer sheet. We'll mail that out to them. They mail that back to us. We'll send them a certificate of completion, assuming that they pass, and they can use that to apply for the California Voter Card Program. We are thrilled to also offer this in Spanish. So here you see a graph of the voter courses completed for the California Voter Card Program by course type. So we currently have 17 approved courses that meet the education requirement for the California Voter Card Program. And so this pie graph here shows the percentage of all cards issued by type. So you'll see the vast majority of voters preferred to take an online course. Some took our home study course, and then the smaller percentage is in classroom courses. So moving on to our youth education component, we offer our AquaSmart Community Book. And this is good for kindergarten through eighth grade. It helps us meet our California education requirement. It's aligned with next generation science standards, and it's a really great resource for teachers, instructors, aquatic centers. It's used with our voting safety partners throughout the state. Over the last reporting period, we distributed about 26,000 of these books statewide through our wonderful partners. Vivian talked to you a little bit about some of the outreach that we've done together. For our in-person outreach events, we're focusing our efforts on events that really feature a large voter presence. These typically include book shows, fairs, and other outdoor expos. So over the last reporting period, we've attended the International Sportsman's Exposition, the Sacramento Boat Show, Civic Salem Power Boat Show, Fred Hall Long Beach Show, and several other local and county fairs. And we plan to continue this on for the next year. We also use digital media to target our outreach online, and you'll see a little bit more of that that content here in just a bit. So here's some of that amazing social media that you've been seeing. It's really taken off, and you know, it's a balance between being governmenty and also relatable and a little bit of humor, but with serious messages of safety. And so our team creates original, engaging content, and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram are our main social media platforms that we participate on. And over the last reporting period, we've received over 54 million impressions and 119,000 website clicks due to our social media content. So by participating in current trends, so sometimes you'll see a lot of similar songs being used and similar concepts. By participating in those current trends, it really ups your engagement and increases your visibility and helps get more attention to your page. Sarah featured here, holding up that life jacket sign. It's one of the trends that was going on social media. She's just really taken to this and done a fantastic job. So follow along for the fun and educational content. I'm going to give you a little preview of something that was created, and it involved multiple agencies. It was a great collaboration, and it was a lot of fun. If you're not following along, please follow us on our social, and you can see some of the more engaging and educational information that we're sharing. So moving on to our life jacket programs. So we use life jackets as an educational tool to promote safe boating, and then as an opportunity to teach proper fit and use. We also partner with organizations throughout this state. I've worked with some of you on the commissions who provide life jacket resources for local communities and organizations. And we work on the local, state, and federal level to distribute life jackets and really make these accessible to the community. We have over 125 life jacket loader stations that we provide resources to, including life jackets and signage. So you see pictured here our life jacket messaging. It's available in both English and Spanish at this point. And we are open to other collaborations and personalization of these signs. We're happy to provide artwork, and those can be printed by other organizations if they wish. This year, we helped install the first life jacket loan station on tribal lands, and we're super excited to have a loaner station with the Hoopa tribe on the Trinity River. It's located at the Tish Tang campground, and so we're super proud to be working with the community to provide those resources. We also worked with an organization that was actually community members to start a life jacket loan station on Bethel Island after the unfortunate drowning of a five-year-old. And but it was one of the ways that the community can honor and help reduce, hopefully reduce potential drownings in the future. Annually, we provide about about 3,000 life jackets. Sometimes we're able to provide more, but you'll see pictured here our new improved screen printed life jackets that we're super excited, branded with our campaign information and hoping these walk away a little bit less from the loaner stations. So this is a really wonderful program that we provide and really just hoping to have access for all to life-saving resources throughout the state. So something really incredible that we worked on last year was starting up a new paddle sports program. It continued on into this year as well. So last year we partnered with Militant Lake State Recreation Area, and they served about 200 participants across 17 programs. That was for this past year. But it's a really unique program where boating education outreach and the Clean and Green Boating Program began partnering with California state parks that offer recreational boating opportunities for their free on-the-water paddle sports safety and instruction to underserved communities for kids, adults, and families. Millerton Lake State Recreation Area partnered with community organizations to reach a diverse audience, including Latino Outdoors, the Fresno chapter, Tribal Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, the Latino Equity Advocacy and Policy Institute, and the Hmong Club at a local high school. We also had other state parks join on board. We have Silverwood State Recreation Area, Candlestick State Recreation Area, Jedediah Smith, Redwood State Recreation Area, and Folsom Lake State Recreation Area. Those are all lots of boards. they offer similar programs and are helping extend our boating safety information and a hands-on approach. We offer publications to the public, and these are some of our most common publications that we provide. Our ABCs of California Boating is newly updated, and we have the ebook version available on our website as well. Here's an image of our course in Spanish as well, and then a flyer that we have on how to take our course. If you mentioned to you about the amazing Dockside podcast, so if you're not subscribed, please take a listen. We're really trying to create engaging content to provide additional, more in-depth information on boating and water safety throughout the state and environmental stewardship. So creating inclusion in boating safety education and outreach is crucial to ensuring that all individuals, regardless of their background, have equal access to critical life-saving safety information and resources. Embracing diversity, equity, and inclusion in this context means recognizing and addressing the unique barriers faced by different communities, whether they be related to socioeconomic status, language, cultural differences, or accessibility. By fostering an inclusive environment, we can better tailor educational programs to meet diverse needs, promote equitable access to safety resources, and ultimately enhance the overall safety and enjoyment of boating for everyone. This approach not only helps prevent accidents and save lives, but builds stronger, more connected communities on the water. So here you see some examples of some of our resources that we're providing in Spanish at this time. So some of our numbers over the last reporting period, provided a digital video, which was available on Facebook and some other streaming resources. And we had radio, 30-second radio advertisements, and addition to social media posts. Over the last reporting period, our digital video had 8.1 million impressions with the Spanish speaking. Spanish radio was 5.6 million and Spanish social media posts was 3.8 million. And so over all the Spanish elements in 2023, we delivered 17.5 million impressions. So we're really proud to be providing additional access to life-saving information. Also on our publications and marina posters, they have QR codes that are pointing to our websites, and the websites, like Vivi mentioned in her presentation, you're able to toggle our website into well over 130 different languages. Okay, and so this is just a little bit of fun of the current campaign that you'll probably see. I actually saw my first billboard this last weekend in a different area of Chapel Hill, but I saw it and I got really excited. So this is part of our new campaign creative, and so I just wanted to give you a little precursor to what you will see out. Right now we have radio, outdoor or billboards, marina posters, gas station and convenience stores. We have video that's running, and they reach voters when they're on the way to fill up. And this year we have new retail banner stands. So that's an opportunity to meet voters where they're at while they're purchasing specifically paddlecraft to try and engage with them to alert them, hey, you are a vessel, and here's some safety information. So it's directing people to our website to get them more information. It's a little clip of a radio spot that we have.
Whether you're boating, floating, paddling, fishing, or just chilling, remember a good day on the water always starts with everyone wearing life jackets. Save the ones you love. Life jackets save lives. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
And the image you see on the screen is one of our billboards that we have in rotation. We have four different versions.
Whether you're boating.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
An example of one of the videos that we'll see. So either digital video that you could see like on YouTube, and also we'll have these, they are at convenience stores and gas stations throughout the state. Example of one of our new Spanish videos that we have out as well. So that concludes my presentation, and I would be really happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, great. Thanks, Melissa. At this time, do we have any public comments?
Yes, Madam Chair, we do have one.
Okay.
Christiana Inesi, you are free to unmute and begin speaking. Christiana, can you hear us?
Okay, we'll come back to her then. Fellow commissioners, any comments, questions? Commissioner Gonzalez?
Thank you. I have a very few quick ones. Small shout out to your staff. Thank you for the very demure, very mindful presentation. So real quickly on the voter card, you mentioned kind of that increase, right? Like you say, like 30%, for example. Do you know, or if I missed it, apologies, like what's helping drive that percentage increase? Is it the mix of dock walkers, just getting the word out through all the various channels? Do you have an idea or any very specific insights?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's a mix of a lot of different things, specifically this year a new age increase. You know, it's really encompassing a much larger audience that is out on the water. So up to 60 years and younger is required. So I think also we're getting to that final phase in. So they're going to need it next year if you're out on the water. And so it could be some folks getting it early that didn't need it before. But I think it's kind of a mixture of everything. And along with our marketing campaign, like I mentioned, we do Google search ads, and you know, our return on investment, we're getting dollar for dollar or under that for the money spent that way. So it's hard to say in the marketing world exactly what triggers those increases, but we would really attribute it to that next phase and level. And it'll be interesting to see what happens next year also.
No, definitely. Thank you. And I also appreciated seeing the examples kind of, especially around Spanish language and kind of that type of language access and inclusion. I remember, I think, my first two commission meetings, it was something that I was curious about. So beautiful example. My last question was, you mentioned for the life jackets, essentially, that this was the first time that they were installed in a tribal reservation. If you can remind me both, A, where that was again, I didn't hear it as clearly, and then is that easy to do? Are there, like, what is facilitating or impeding the ability to have more in more reservations?
Thank you for that question. That's great. So this one is with the Hoopa tribe on the Trinity River, and it's located at the Tishtang campground. And I think really, the reason there haven't been more is possibly they haven't known. It's not a program that we're able to broadcast because we do have limited resources. So it's kind of when folks come to us, we're able to, if we have the resources, provide the resources out. And so I'd love to have a million life jacket loan stations. It's funny, when I read it, I did it in our practice run too. I said 125,000. I'm like, I wish we had 125,000 loan stations. But yeah, you know, I think we're doing great with the number that we have. I would love to implement more. So if you know of more places, please reach out. Sarah and I work closely with, local organizations to get those out. I didn't really go into depth of how those loan stations are run. Some of them are standalone loaner boards, like the ones that you saw in the presentation, but others are, you know, they could be a fire station or a marina. They don't have to be on a standalone loaner board like that. They can be in a bin as long as they're properly storing them. They're drying them out before they put them away. So they're not getting mildew or anything like that. But, they don't have to operate a certain way. We don't have specific operating procedures that they have to follow. They just have to be, keep them maintained in serviceable condition and be providing them to the community.
Perfect. Thank you.
Hope that answers your question.
That did. I appreciate it.
Great.
Commissioner Hallahan.
Great. Actually, this is Christiana Anisi. I just wanted to, I think that was a great segue into my comment, and that we have been given a bunch of life jackets through your program at the Sea Scouts in San Francisco. And so I just wanted to say thank you and how great it was that we have these really nice life jackets that go out every time and are staying tough and keeping the kids afloat. So thanks very much.
Well, I'd love to hear that. Thank you so much. Oftentimes we send the resources out and, we hope they're being used. And so that's really great to hear. Thank you so much for participating.
Thank you.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for all the great work you do. I know it's you have an upbeat energy. And as I was just speaking in the break, it's really upbeat until something not okay happens. So we do know through training and prevention and life jackets, those things happen so rarely. So it's wonderful to be working in a preventative space. It's hard to prevent everything. So but you keep a really upbeat, good energy towards that prevention. So it's really good. I see it all over and I like watching and following. And a lot of distribution of life jackets. We helped with that. And I have a comment and a couple questions. In the last year or two with AI, I have seen our educational material picked up quite a bit. Now when you ask questions randomly with your phone, even if you're actually in another state, a lot of our information from our California boating education comes up really quickly. And AI is definitely pulling it down and taking it and referencing our website. So it's a huge pickup for us. And I really like to see that in Spanish, Chinese, Vietnamese. because there are a lot of people who, you know, actually use the browser all the time in their home language, and they need to be getting that, picking it up, picking up the info. And so not all of the site is AI friendly, but your work is very AI friendly. Somehow the way you're posting it, because you're social media aware, it's getting pulled down a lot. But like referencing like how many youth educational groups there are and where you can go to, none of that is AI. So if with your working with your website redesign and all that kind of stuff, the more you can say, this is really important educational information, we need to have this in multiple languages, because, you know, some mom in Stockton, she's Vietnamese, she wants to know this, you know, and these are the ways they find us, these people who are looking. So whatever we can do, especially it's not that expensive, and we can really use it because that's the future, right? So it's, I wanted to just ask, with your spend per person, I don't know exactly what your spend is, but with your marketing spend and how you're connecting with people, it sounds like you're getting a really good bang for the people. Is that what your research is saying?
Yeah. And so not all of the cards that are applications that we're receiving are coming through from our advertising dollars, but our advertising, we're able to hone in on the ones that are clicked through exactly from our advertising. So we're able to see the return on investment from exact clicks. So I'm not sure if that's answering your question, but we're getting a mix of folks coming in from our advertising and from other organic means.
Like AI, stuff like that, which is really going well. Yeah. I'm with a lot of Sea Scouts. We teach thousands of kids. We get thousands statewide on the water, and distributed these books, several hundred of them, and got feedback. And when you take another step, I and some of the other Sea Scouts or people that run these aquatic centers would like to be more involved, because you're having to span it out through a 6 or 7 year grade period. You know, so they only are focused into the thing that they want. And then just a few other things that we'd like to encourage, kind of a more modern view of what a child should be responsible for, because we're teaching them, you know, and we don't want them to feel overly responsible or stuff like that. So, you know, just there are some awesome humans that are out there doing it all the time, and it'd be great to be inclusive with them if there's a refresh.
Definitely. Thank you so much. Yep. It's very timely. We'll be working on that in the near future. So
yeah, anybody who's online, I would say they could reach out to all of us or any of us and add, you know, because that's what we want as Californians, adding bright ideas and getting as best as we can. Thank you for all your great work. Thanks for your whole team.
Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thanks, Melissa. I think we're going to move on to the next agenda item. Amy Rigby, I'd like to invite you up to give us an update on the Aquatic Center grants.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Great. I'm waiting for my presentation here. I think they're going to run it for me.
Stand by, Amy.
Okay, thank you. All right, so good afternoon. My name is Amy Rigby, and I'll be presenting a program update on DBW's Aquatic Center Grant Program. Next slide, please. So this is a federal pass-through grant. DBW receives funding for this program from the Federal Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. The fund is administered by the United States Coast Guard through the Recreational Boating Safety Grant. DBW is required to follow federal and Coast Guard guidelines when granting these funds to aquatic centers. So a little bit about the program goals. The goals are set by the Coast Guard, and that is to reduce boating injuries and fatalities. To best achieve this goal, DBW's Aquatic Center grant application takes a targeted approach to improving boating safety by requiring applicants to identify specific safety issues on their local waterways and indicate how their boating safety courses are designed to improve these issues and thereby reduce injuries and fatalities. So courses emphasize rules of the road, skills development, and proper use of safety equipment. Next slide, please. So who can apply? All colleges and universities based in California, public agencies, and nonprofit organizations with a 501c3 status. And like I said, organizations should be based in California and doing and operating in California. To be eligible for funding, agencies must have an existing boating safety education program. They need to provide on-the-water boating safety education, and they need to teach boating safety skills, particularly how to safely operate a boat. And they must require that life jackets be worn when on or near the water at their center. Next slide, please. So qualifying activities, really, it's just about really every type of boating. So just to mention a few, all types of paddling, including whitewater rafting, canoeing, kayaking, stand-up paddleboard, and beginning rowing when life jackets are worn. Also power boating, including open motorboat operation, tow sport activities, you know, water skiing, wakeboarding, and such, and personal watercraft operation. And all types of sailing, sailing, windsurfing, kite surfing, that type of thing. And the different types of funding people can apply for are, first of all, equipment. They can purchase boats, engines, trailers, non-permanent storage and docking, and boat parts, and other boat-related supplies like life jackets and radios. They can apply for scholarships. So the scholarships can offset the cost of a course. Some people choose to make an entire course cheaper if they're dealing with a population that can't afford it. Some others choose to discount certain attendees who have demonstrated that they have financial difficulties. They can also discount if there's a safety issue as well. And instructor training is also available. And so lots of different instructor training courses can be offset with that, with the grant. And then also $2,000 additional each year is available to each grantee who wants to apply or is for an event that they can do. And it can be during National Safe Boating Week in May, or it can coincide with another event that they may have, such as an opening day or other local event where people are already coming to their center. Next slide, please. So some funding restrictions. We do not provide any funding for permanent structures, but as mentioned previously, items such as storage sheds or modular removable docking are available, or such items like a Moby mat that might help transport equipment or even wheelchairs across the sand. And you can see some of those in these slides here, some examples of the non-permanent storage that is eligible. The use of equipment for competition is limited to 10% of overall program use. And the use of equipment for rentals is limited to 40% of overall program use. And some of those are set by the Coast Guard as well, that Coast Guard has some requirements regarding those. Next slide, please. So for last year, fiscal year 23-24, we were able to grant just over $1.2 million in funding to 33 agencies. The maximum award was $62,000, and the average award was almost $37,000. 65,000 students were trained, and 28% of the students came from underserved areas. Next slide, please. I should say this year, I'll just add that this year we have about $1.4 million. So it's an increase from last year. So that's good news for the program. not quite as high as it was 2 years ago, but we're very grateful to get more funding for it. So some of our program updates. So we're continuing, we continue to revise our grant application and our scoring matrix to make sure it's as fair as possible and is in line with the Coast Guard regulations and their guidelines as it can be. And so some of our other upcoming highlights are that our 24-25 application is currently open. People are applying, and it will be open through October 25th at noon. And we have two Aquatic Center Director meetings each year, and one in Northern California and one in Southern California. We just had the Northern California meeting on September 25th and 26th. UC Berkeley was the host. We had really nice weather for that meeting. That was really nice. And everybody had a really good time. We got a lot of feedback from our exit surveys. Everyone was so happy to be back in person. This is the second year we've been back in person with these meetings after the COVID restrictions. And there's just a lot of nice synergy in the meeting and people sharing information. It was really wonderful. And our Southern California meeting will take place next week, October 8th and 9th, and it will be in San Diego. It's a Boy Scout facility, the San Diego Youth Aquatic Center, on Fiesta Island in San Diego, at Mission Bay. Next slide, please. Just a few other notes about some of the innovative programming that is provided. We have, let's see here. So here's some programming. There's a course structured for people who are passengers aboard vessels, but they've never been the operator, and the course helps them learn the skills necessary to use the marine radio and get the boat back to safety in the event that the primary operator becomes incapacitated. I'm happy with courses like that because I was the accident analyst for DBW for about 25 years, and I saw a lot of accidents in which people did not know what to do when the operator became incapacitated or fell overboard. So classes like that are, I consider them to be important. Also for younger students, there's things like Pirate Camp, which when the kids are very young and their attention spans are low, but you want to, or short, I should say, and you want to still engage them and get boating safety education to them. Things like Pirate Camp can be really engaging, and then they're still learning, even though they don't even know they're learning. And then we have things like Family Night, where during summer camp in the summer, say on a Monday through Friday camp, every Thursday evening, parents are invited to participate in the educational skits and information. And then they get to follow that up with an on-the-water experience. And this is really important because parents learn the importance of wearing life jackets, not just for their children, but for themselves. And again, this is so important because we have seen so many accidents involving families where the children survive, but the parent does not, because they did not choose to wear a life jacket or see the importance of it. So those are just some examples of just types of innovative programming, but there's all sorts of programming that we support in this program. So next slide, please. We also coordinate with other programs, other DBW programs, our law enforcement, the grants program that we have. They also will come and engage our audiences on boating safety days or other times and assist them with safety demonstrations and informative boating safety related talks. We also, 21 of the grantees in my program also participated in the Coastal Cleanup Day that Vivian Matuk organizes and other environmentally friendly activities. And also DBW's Outreach and Education Unit, who you just heard from Melissa Miranda. She provides life jackets and educational boating safety teaching materials to our grantees for their events. So we appreciate all of those coordinations and efforts. And then next slide, please. So this concludes my presentation, and I will be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Great. Thank you, Amy, for your presentation. Karina, do we have any public comments at this time?
Madam Chair, we do not have any comments at this time.
Okay. Fellow commissioners, comments, questions? Okay. Commissioner Hallahan.
Hi. Just thank you so much. And I have a quick question. How do you analyze that these grants are going throughout the state in a equal manner or proportional to population?
Well, we ask questions or give points to programs who are operating in areas where we don't have a lot of presence. So that's one way. But we basically have to, when we advertise and the people who apply, we do, besides giving points to people where we can spread the money out, sometimes we also make sure that if you're operating amongst neighbors, that you're not duplicating efforts and that you're, the programs are serving different populations, or that, you know, that there's not a lot of duplication there, things like that. But a lot of the places where we are currently funding are high population centers where there's a lot of accidents and or voting.
So you're looking at areas where there's incidents so that your money goes to chaining. What about areas where they're not really getting a lot of vote access, say like Oakland or something like that? Are you identifying areas where they're not getting funding or haven't been getting funding?
Our Bay Area, we do have a lot of presence in the Bay Area. City of Oakland is one of our grantees, Berkeley, Alameda, San Francisco. We have a lot of programs in the Bay Area.
I mean, it's a huge state. It's like almost 40 million people. So I don't, right. I mean, it's such a task. It's such a mountain to climb. It's amazing what you do and how you do it. I just wonder, how do you overview that? Do you review that it's distributing well, proportionally?
I do. The program about access, when there's boating accidents, like the Coast Guard wants us to, I'm worried I'm going to run out of power. I'm getting a power message on my PC and it's plugged in. In case we get cut off here. So we have to give the grants when we're trying to get access to where there are boating accidents and not just where people need access to the water. We have to kind of make sure that we are responsive to the Coast Guard and their requirements to distribute the funding.
Northern California is one of the largest accident incident centers in the United States. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. So,
yes.
So a lot of the money is going into the inland waters of the Bay Area or Northern California?
It's spread out. We have some inland programs and some Bay Area programs. And up north, we have programs in Redding. We have programs on the Feather River. Mm-hmm. We have programs various places, Tamales Bay, several on the American River, so all over the place, Humboldt. So it goes all over Northern California as well as Southern.
It's a daunting task, I'm sure it is, and to get programs that want to stay there, because you're making an investment into equipment and other things, so you want people that are going to stay there over so many years.
Right. And we have to be responsive to people who apply. We can't go out and say, you know what, you're going to get money. They have to apply and they have to have the infrastructure to be able to apply and to want to have the wherewithal to start a program and be running one. And so sometimes people want to be served by existing programs. And then the programs that we do serve go and they bring people in and serve a wide swath of people. Like the city of Oakland serves like the whole fifth grade. And so some of them do a very good job of trying to just spread out the funding really well out to people. And so that's really good too, as far as spreading things.
Just one more question. So if you were to look at the whole pie of money for 2023, what percentage were people that were creating new systems like that were anywhere from 2 or 3, maybe 4 years old? Like what percentage were on the new?
Were new?
Newish, yeah.
Newish. I would say every year we probably get, I would say, it really varies, but we have new applicants coming in all the time and who come to our meetings, and sometimes they choose to apply and sometimes they don't. So sometimes I've had many, many applicants, like probably maybe 15% of the applicants are new, and some years it's lower. And I think after COVID too, I think a lot of people are kind of having to rebuild a lot of things, but some years we have quite a few. I'm not sure if I could give you the exact dollar amount but definitely we have new programs all the time who come in and are successful and get funding.
Is that what you mean? Yeah, no, I just want to make sure that if it's not such a big hurdle for people that don't have anything going on in their area to make something going on in their area. And some of the applicants and people that have been awardees that I've talked to, they have to work hard to get this money, you know, and it serves them because they might get it every other year, every couple of years, and then that investment pays off to have their center grow. So I just want to make sure that the hurdle's not too big. But it's great that you do those events and that you help people out. So yeah, I think you're doing a great job, and you answered my question. It's just just trying to make sure that, you know, grant writing's hard. People who aren't highly educated but are really good water people, you know, want to do it. Just, you know, to make sure that people can get over that hurdle to get going, you know.
When they do apply, we do offer a grant review afterwards and work with them on, you know, talking to them about how they responded and things like that. And so that really helps people if they reach out and they take advantage of that. I think it really helps applicants in future years actually become successful. But they have to kind of take those steps and be advocate. And we do announce say we don't award someone funding, or we do. We say, hey, here's the steps. You can ask me for a grant review. You can come to our meetings. You can learn. And so we have a lot of avenues for people, I think, to overcome some of those hurdles if they're willing to kind of engage.
That's great that you're spending that time in dialogue and a review. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Great. You're welcome.
Thank you. And I believe Commissioner Gonzalez. Yeah.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah, I have one quick question. Although I guess on that note, I wanted to stress that as well, that from both my experience and what I've heard, not just within this division, but other divisions of state parks, staff being really able and willing to help. And so that may sound like contrary to your opinion that people was like, how do I navigate that bureaucracy? And have staff said, give me a call. So my quick question was on the slide that you had 28% of students from underserved areas. Can you remind me what's used to determine that percentage? Is it a Cal Envirosuite screen? Is it the Parks Community Fact Finder? Is it a mix? I'm just curious, like what's used to determine that percentage? Oh.
Oh, her power was going.
She did say so. Okay, well.
I would say for our commissioners, if you do have questions, to please go through staff and we can get back to you. And we do that. There are some things that we can do prior to the meeting that might need a little more staff assistance and whatnot. They're always available. And with that, let's go to the next agenda. Yeah. Thank you, Jose. And then with that, I would say let's go to the next agenda item, number 12, for the commission to suggest agenda items for the next meeting. Commissioner Hallahan?
I am going to just continue on with this great path in which you are driving. The next meeting will be in an interesting place, and there's going to be a lot of decision making happening.
Yeah.
So I'm going to defer to that. And then in February, we're going to have another meeting. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I'll have some solid suggestions.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Commissioner Gonzalez?
No suggestions in terms of the next meeting, other than I'll add that I forgot at the beginning to stress my appreciation for being in Colusa and Williams and noticing all of the signs, both in parks and waterways, that were supported with public funding.
Okay. All right. Well, if there's no other items, is there a motion to adjourn?
I'd like to move.
Thank you. Is there a second?
There's a second to adjourn.
Oh, wonderful. Are there any objections? No? Hearing no objections, so moved. And I'm looking at everyone, and I believe we're adjourned. We'll see you next month.
Thank you, everyone.